Hello and welcome to Elevate to Success, discussions on project management and leadership ideas, tips and techniques of being a project manager, agile practitioner, or a leader in your organization. So let's go.
Well, welcome back again, Alan, for another episode of Lean Project Management. I think this is part four. So I'm gonna throw the ball over to you and let's get rolling.
Yeah, thanks, Lloyd. Happy to be back. Hope everybody's being safe here. So this fourth part, I think I was originally saying that we were going to focus on lean budgeting for the fourth part. Third part, we focused on the portfolio Kanban. I think we went over that pretty well. We talked a little bit about how often that group meets in what we call a portfolio sync. So this last part is actually a little more than just lean budgeting. We're going to cover the lean budgeting. Let's call this applying lean governance. And so this is the last piece of the lean portfolio management responsibilities. And so what is that? Well, first part of that is overseeing agile contracting. And so that's a pretty new concept where we take contracts that were traditionally waterfall, or let's call them traditional contract types that had pros and cons to them, like firm fixed price, which risk is mostly shifted to the supplier, or a target price, where there's a shared risk and shared economic opportunity. And then there's cost plus, which is risk mostly shifted to the customer. And then there's time and materials, where risk is mostly shifted to the customer. An agile contract is different in that it seeks a win-win approach that balances short and long-term economic outcomes for both parties, spells out guidelines that prescribe adaptive responses to changing requirements, and provides incentives for both the buyer and the suppliers to collaborate towards the best solution so that all parties share in the benefits if the intended value is delivered sooner or at a lower cost, or all parties share in the pain of delays and cost overruns. You see how that can be a benefit for everybody?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so just like comparing waterfall to agile, with a traditional contract, you're gonna have fixed scope, and then cost and schedule can be variable. And so you can say, you know, I want the airplane to have this and this feature, to have this and this speed, have this and this cargo capability. Okay, so then 2 years later, you find out the cost has doubled and it's gonna take a year longer to deliver. And it happens. So, but with an agile contract, we're gonna say, the cost is gonna be four PIs. We know how much it costs to stand up a team. We know how much it costs to stand up an Azure release train. You can stand up 10 Azure release trains. We know that cost. And so we can say, we need you to deliver as much as you can in 2 years' time. And then after 2 years, you're gonna have all these different features, and the thing that has pivoted is the scope. Okay, in 2 years' time, we got this done. It doesn't have the electronic jammer on it yet, but we can do that in the next couple of PIs. What doesn't flex is quality. We're not gonna rush this through. We're not gonna cut corners. We're not gonna leave wrenches inside the airplane. Quality does not flex. With a traditional contract, they're gonna be rushing and quality will be at risk. That's exactly what happened with the Boeing deal with the Air Force tankers. They left all kinds of crap inside the airplanes. With an agile contract, both parties win and both parties share in the pain. And so that's a new but important concept with agile portfolio contracting. So then we have lean governance collaboration. So we can forecast and budget dynamically, and we can measure our performance, and we can coordinate continuous compliance. So what does adjusting budgets dynamically actually mean? The traditional approach is big upfront annual planning. I've been through many of those. So, you know, you're talking about identifying all the projects that you want to do for the year, Maybe if you're on a calendar annual budget, that would happen in October for the next annual year. So you tally all these things up, figure out which ones are high priority, low priority, medium priority, estimate what they're going to cost based on number of hours, who you're going to bring in to work on them, what's that going to cost. And that is very painful and time consuming and never accurate either. It versus a rolling wave planning, which might happen twice a year, and we adjust dynamically. We take the current portfolio budget, which might be, I'll just make this up, $10 million, and then we take the input to that, which might be changes to our strategic themes. Maybe we need to pivot on a theme. Current portfolio performance, market changes, you know, maybe because of COVID, you know, the demand for something is dramatically different, so we're going to change the budget for that. And then product feedback, of course, and economic indicators. So that relates to Corona right there. And so then you have your next period's budget. And so that's your starting point. And so we can adjust these budgets most ideally every 6 months. And so how do we do that? Mm-hmm. We want to apply, it's called participatory budgeting. And so most organizations generate more good ideas than they can fund, resulting in portfolio prioritization change. It's like, if I asked you, you know, I'm giving you $100,000, what are you going to do with it? You could come up with so many good ideas that even though that's a lot of money, you're not going to have enough. And so companies are the same way. They can be full of ideas, but not have enough money or resources to do them all. So how do you prioritize? So with participatory budgeting, we get fiduciaries and participants from all the different value streams to participate collaboratively and take a look at all the epics that are in the portfolio backlog, maybe in the analyze phase too, because they're close to becoming approved. And mm-hmm. and these choices determine how we're going to spend our money. So let's get to the next step of how you do that. So we have several steps to prepare and actually conduct these forums. Okay. The first step is to prepare the content. And so all the epics that are in the portfolio backlog, they've already been approved. There's already been a lean business case. Okay, so let's take the epics and lean business cases that are also in the review state because they're almost approved by the lean portfolio management. Let's put together a booklet. Think like you're going to an art auction. There's going to be a booklet, and it's going to show the pieces of art. It might show the provenance, the history, you know, where it came from. So the epic will maybe have you know, one page per epic. So it's an even shortened description of the lean business case. And so you distribute that a couple of weeks before the participatory budgeting. And so who do you submit that to? Well, you all the people who are going to participate in the participatory budgeting. So that could be product and solution managers, some representation from the Agile teams, all the enterprise architects, system architects, business owners, LPM, fiduciaries, and maybe some other key stakeholders. So you get a room full of people, and then everybody sits at a table. So let me move along to getting ready. So we have to take the current budget and break it out into two parts, run the business and grow the business. The run the business is off the table for discussion. We're not going to turn the lights off. We have to continue maintaining our products. We have to continue keeping our lights on and running our business. But then the rest of that budget can be set aside as grow the business, open to negotiation. And so we take our current value stream budgets, what did we spend last 6 months on that budget? And then the input at the table, all these people are sitting at a table, they have a booklet of all the different epics. And so then the leader will say, okay, guys, everybody has $1 million. Our budget is $10 million. Our run the business has been decided at $5 million. Everybody hand over $500,000 each so that we can have the $5 million. Okay, so the $5 million goes into the kitty. We've assigned the run the business money. Okay, so now everybody has some money left in their hand. That's the grow the business. Okay, so let's talk about our priorities. And so one guy is saying, well, you know, I really like this idea of making a new data center. I like this idea of buying a new enterprise human capital management system, you know, HR system. Okay, so what are these going to cost? And which one do we think is going to give our business more value? And let's talk about the pros and cons. And as a group, we're going to agree on our priorities. And the beauty of that is that the folks at the table are from all around the business. And so no one person, it's not going to be IT making the decision. It's not going to be business making the decision. It's a group participating in what the priorities are. And so then each one of these tables is going to come up with their priorities and what they're going to cost. And mm-hmm. and so you might have six tables and you might have three value streams. So each table is going to have that same value stream. So we can compare how those tables come up with their money. So then participants determine where to allocate the money and collaboratively determine which epics are selected. So at that point, we have a key output of those epics are already assigned to particular value streams. So if we're sitting at a table and we like this human capital management system a lot, and we decide that that's going to add the most business value, we're going to approve that. We're going to hand over the money to do that. And so that money will get shifted to that value stream. And so it's not officially shifted yet, but that's the recommendation of that table. And so all the table's outputs are then reviewed by the Lean Portfolio Management. And then the participatory budgeting process is completed. And the Lean Portfolio Management will make some decisions. But this is their recommendation. And so what are the benefits of doing this? It helps ensure that empowered value stream stakeholders are making the best possible decisions. It results in value stream budgets that are more realistic and more achievable than those imposed by top down. It utilizes more ownership and improves morale. It gains better agreement and buy-in for funding each of the value streams. And so everybody participates in this. We're going to own in our decisions. And so after that, we'll look at all the different tables' outputs and adjust the value streams either up or down, depending on which priorities were selected. And the value stream budgets go up or down. And so a majority of the money for these value streams is funding the Agile release trains. And so if an Agile release train budget goes down, but another Agile release train budget goes up, well, that means that they have to fork over some teams. We don't want to break up the teams. So it maybe one Agile release train has 12 teams and their budget goes down, so they might lose two teams. And so the Agile release train where the budget goes up, they get those two teams. And so remember, we stand up teams that are cross-functional, so they should be all capable of doing the work. You know, that's a whole other discussion of how the teams are selected that move. But we don't break up teams. Think of it like a SEAL team. The SEAL team stays together. However, we can move them over to Europe or Africa or, you know, Asia area, but the team stays together. And so... So that's how participatory budgeting works. So then once they've been moved, then they need to be prioritized by that Agile release train. So that epic is now approved, the value stream gets the money, and so we have to prioritize them. And so we use something called weighted shortest job first, where we prioritize based on the cost of delay. We don't know exactly what that cost of delay is. And so how does that work is, say I have two epics the human capital management system or an SAP system? Which one do I do first? Well, you do the one that will cost you the most money in a future time if you don't do it. So that's the one that you do. And so how do you figure that out? Well, what SAFE recommends are three proxy variables that we take a look at: user business value, time criticality, and risk reduction opportunity enablement. And so we compare all of our epics as a comparison using Fibonacci numbers. And then the last component is the job size, which is a proxy for duration. And so the best way to describe that is I'll have a spreadsheet, and actually all of the top Agile tools, by the way, have either built-in or a plug-in to support weighted shortest job first prioritization. They all have it: Jira, Rally, version 1, Jira Align. And so just look for that, and it's easy to get. But so you have the three components of cost of delay, and so each column you assign a Fibonacci number. So this one is my lowest user business value. That's a 1. This one is my highest. I'm going to give that a 21. Okay, next column. Time criticality. This one is time critical because I have a convention coming up in 2 quarters, and I have to present this. If it's not, the value is going to go way down. So that's going to be my 21 for time criticality. This other one is not so time critical, so I'm going to give that a 1. Okay, next, risk reduction opportunity enablement. This particular product is gonna significantly increase our security by building in two-factor authentication. It's gonna eliminate hacking by 10x. So I'll give the risk reduction on that one a 21. Or conversely, opportunity enablement. This is gonna enable me to penetrate a market that we haven't touched. So I'm going to give that an opportunity enablement of 21. So we give each of those columns a number related to a Fibonacci number. And then we do the final one, job size. And then we do some arithmetic. You add up the items for the cost of delay component and divide by the job size. And that's going to give you a number. Then you sort by the number, and the number with the highest weighted shortest job first is the one that this tool recommends. And so let me preface that by saying this is just a tool that you're going to pull out of your toolbox. There's more than one way to prioritize work. Just like a crescent wrench is one way to tighten a bolt, there's many other ways. There's a socket wrench. There's just a regular pair of pliers. And so use this as a tool in your toolbox. So then we prioritize our work. We make sure that we've considered our enabler work, because you have to build in that architectural runway. So maybe based on our weighted shortest job first prioritization, it says to build the data farm after the website goes live. Well, the enterprise architect might have a problem with that, because he might say the new website can't even handle more than 1,000 people unless we rebuild that data farm first. So right. You make adjustments. And then you also consider market rhythms. Maybe you're a toy factory and you got to get this thing on the shelves by September. Otherwise, you're going to miss the Christmas market. Maybe, I'm just thinking, maybe you have to get this thing at the CES show in January, or you're going to miss the market. And so you have to consider market rhythms. So not to confuse everybody or make it more complicated, but this is complicated stuff. It's important that you make the right decisions. And so then we talk about going backwards and how far out do we have to plan? Well, okay, so we have this epic. I'll just make this up. It's a 1600 point epic. So we've associated $1,000 to each point. So a 1600 point epic is a $1.6 million piece of work. And so how fast can we get this done? Well, it depends, first of all, on the velocity of the Azure release train that's going to work on it. And then it also depends on the capacity allocation for that Azure release train to get that type of epic done. If you look at the ability for that Azure Release Train to get work done as a PI, and that Azure Release Train needs to decide, okay, so if all of our work is a piece of pie, we're going to carve out 70% for adding business value. We're going to set aside 20% for enabler work, technology work. And then we're going to set aside 10% for production defects, refactoring, unplanned work. Okay, so then this Azure Release Train can put out 1,200 points per Azure Release Train. Well, so then 1,200 points times 70%, not sure what the arithmetic is that. I'm not, you know, thinking super sharp. But that will tell us how long it will take to deliver that epic. And with the best information, we can reliably predict when it's going to get done. So
that should be that should be pretty close, right? I mean, in terms of prediction.
Oh, it's going to give you, put it this way, it's going to give you more reliable information than a Gantt chart. It, you know, look at any other large project in our recent history that's been delivered either, you know, in the business world or with the military, and their timelines are so far off, it's not even realistic. A Gantt chart is doing so much guesswork without any knowledge. They never work right. Never work right. A military project. I would say it's 10% of the time they're over budget and late, and so that's due to Gantt charts right there. They're moving as fast as they can to agile and safe. By the way, defense contractors and the military in particular, every one of the services.
It kind of makes sense that they move in that direction.
It's literally fit for them. And so then how do we measure success? We take a look at a combination of things. We can measure success through our strategic theme OKRs. Remember, we set those up early on in our discussion. So objectives and key results for our strategic themes. And so then we can measure value stream KPIs. We can take a look at program predictability. So each team is going to have a program predictability. That's going to roll up to the Azure Release Train. Then that could roll up to the solution level. And then it can even roll up to a value stream. This value stream is produced 2,000 points per PI. It has two Azure Release Trains in it. It's 95% reliable when we give them work. So that's a big metric that executives like to see. How reliable is this organization? Then we can look at number of deploys and releases per program increment. This one seminal book, the DevOps Handbook by Gene Kim. There's like several other authors, but he's the main author. And so he said that high performing IT organizations grow from a standpoint of their stock price twice as fast as organizations that are low performing. So what do you define as high performing? A high performing organization is one that releases daily and can fix defects within 15 minutes. If you're taking longer than a day to fix a defect, if you're doing releases once a month, you're a low performing company. And so everybody, of course, wants to be a high performing company. The perfect example is Amazon. Amazon releases every 2 seconds. All day, every day, forever. And so you say, oh, well, that's crazy. We don't need that. Well, okay, maybe you don't. But to be able to get into that continuous deployment mode of delivering value as frequently as possible is your goal. And then we take a look at the cumulative flow diagram, where we look at the state of our work. Are we truly WIP limiting our work so we can get work through the pipeline as fast as possible? Because the faster we can get it through, the faster we can get that customer feedback, and the faster we can adjust or move forward. And then lastly, we should be doing self-assessments on a regular basis to see where our opportunities are. And so that's That's the lean portfolio right there. And so an adoption roadmap might look something like first step, establish the LPM team, gain executive buy-in, identify opportunities for improvement in the process. Because the process, just like doing a PI planning, is messy, confusing, and dirty at first. It'll be the same thing with an LPM. It'll get better. And so the next step might be organizing around the current state, establish your Kanban, establish a schedule. You know, are you going to meet every month? Are you going to meet every 2 months? Get that established. And then identify your strategic themes, define your vision, identify your epics to realize that vision, and then establish your lean budget guardrails. Remember the Horizon 1, Horizon 2, capacity allocation, those sorts of things. And then establish the Agile Project Management Office, maybe even a Lean Agile Center of Excellence. You know, have the other Agile folks roll up to that office, you know, your Scrum Masters, your Release Train Engineers, your Solution Train Engineers, and then adopt Lean metrics, establish value stream KPIs, and then continually run assessments and learn and mature. I'm not going to say it's as easy as following that cookbook, but that's an excellent high level plan for any organization of small to extra large to adopt a lean portfolio management. I can't overemphasize how valuable this can be. You know, I've heard companies say that SAFe, you know, Scale Agile Framework, was the hardest thing we've ever done. However, it was the most valuable. And so this is the last piece of the puzzle. It's going to be as hard as anything, because with a larger company, the portfolio, that's going to be the last waterfall bastion. The people that want something big, and they know exactly when they want it, and they know exactly what they want, and everything else is not negotiable. I don't care if people are working in the middle of the night to get this delivered. And then, you know, scope is going to be putting out bad product. There's all kinds of bad things that happen that way. Applying Agile and lean practices at the portfolio level makes total sense. And you know, now that I've been using it and implementing this at several companies, it's like, why would they do anything different? It makes no sense. And so to be successful in doing it, just like going on off and getting a surgery, I do not recommend doing it yourself or hiring somebody who's never done it before. Find somebody who's experienced with implementing a lean portfolio, you know, have a good discussion with him, make sure he fits in your organization, and then jump in and do it. The sooner you do it, the more successful your company will be.
Yeah, I agree. You don't want someone that hasn't done it before in the onset of putting something like that together, then all of a sudden, whoops.
Oh, yeah. That's like do-it-yourself brain surgery. I watched a YouTube. I'm gonna go take this tumor out of my head.
Yeah, exactly. You know.
Yeah.
Well, that was very informative, Alan. That was some good stuff. So where can our listeners go to kind of obtain more information on you know, lean project management?
Well, a couple different places. So scaleagileframework.com is the website that supports Scale Agile Framework. Everything that I've talked about is open and available on this website. They don't hide anything. It's all free. You can go and buy a reference book. It'll have the same information as on the website. You take a class, it will cost you money to get certified as a lean portfolio manager. It's a very difficult class, but you'll come out of that with subject matter expertise. Any SPC has some basic qualifications to implement a lean portfolio. However, there's a specific class called LPM, Lean Portfolio Management. I'm certified with that, and I've also implemented lean portfolio management a number of times. And so look for somebody who has that background, the LPM certification, and also an SPC, or send somebody in your organization to go get those certifications. If they know your organization well and they already have significant project management background, they'll be successful. They'll be successful. Or my company. You know, I would love to help out anybody who's interested. You can contact me through latticeconsulting.com. And so go to that website, and you can contact me through there.
All right, Alan. Well, thank you. I think this is the last, right, of the Lean portfolio.
This is four of four until we come up with a new one to talk about.
Okay. No, that sounds good. So I appreciate your time again.
My pleasure, Lloyd. It's always a pleasure to do a talk with you.
This is Elevate to Success, your host, Lloyd Phillip B. with Infinity Bulk. For more information on how we can help you with your project management, coaching, as well as mentoring, you can go to my website at www.infinitybulk.com and send me an email. Please share this podcast and also tell a friend about us. Until then, keep it real.